We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
My name is Jari Bolander. Welcome to the Entrepreneur Ethos Podcast. On this podcast, we're going to take a deep dive into the traits, values, beliefs, and skills of all sorts of entrepreneurs to learn how to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient world. Let's get started. Hey, everyone. Wanted to jump in quickly and first thank you for listening and also tell you about the release of the audio version of my book, The Entrepreneur Ethos, narrated by David A. Knesser. If you want to support the show, you can buy it wherever audiobooks are sold. Links are also in the show notes. Now, on to my guests for today, Roger Naren of Jar Audio. Before he started Jar Audio, Roger worked in advertising, where he built a career. He loved managing clients, but he was also drawn to the idea of starting his own company. And after some efforts that failed, he and two friends started talking about starting a podcast company. Before they'd even figured out a name, they landed a client through a connection. Talk about awesome market validation, right? In the last 3 years, they've taken on such clients as Lululemon and Expedia, helping to build their brands through podcasts. Roger shares that he still struggles with the uncertainty of entrepreneurship and how he is now coming to terms with just having to push past that fear. A lot of us have that, right? While Roger and Jar Audio focus on branded content, they follow the principles of good content marketing. These include telling a good story and knowing your audience. The best podcasts, Roger explains, aren't advertisements, but take into consideration the audience's needs and challenges. As an example, a podcast produced for a bank helps people navigate the economy in time of COVID. Another, produced for a wellness company, offers information about holistic health. While podcasting isn't at a point where you can really assess the ROI, one of the advantages is what Roger calls the halo effect, where brands become respected and known through the high-quality information and engaging stories they offer. Now, let's get better together. Roger Naren, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much, Jari. Appreciate you having me.
Yeah, I really appreciate you coming on because you're like a fellow, I don't know, professional type audio folk, which I know rarely get to.
Brothers in podcast.
Yeah, brothers in podcast. I rarely get to talk to
people actually in the business. And you're actually working at, or the CEO of Jar Audio, which is a firm and a network and all that great stuff. And we'll definitely talk a little bit about that later on. But as I always like to say, you know, my first question, we talked a little bit about this before. So to put people at ease, why don't you tell me how you got to be doing what you're doing today?
Cool. Definitely can. So I've spent the last 20 years in the advertising and design world. I live in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And coming out of college, got into the ad world and was always in client services. So I worked for big agencies like DDB and Cosette, which is one of the top agencies in the country, and managed client relationships. And I absolutely love the advertising world, love the marketing world, not only for the people, but also the challenges. What we get to do every day is different, and which really suits my brain, because I need to have the variety day in and day out. And I remember somebody once telling me that advertising is the rock star of the business world. And so for me, that was sort of my green light to, you know, to have as much fun in the job as possible. Because I, you know, we get to be creative, but also solve business problems. And so I love that career. I really, you know, created some amazing relationships. But over time, you get the bug and you start thinking about what it'd be like starting something on your own. And at the time, I had done a couple podcasts myself, just purely as a hobby. You know, I got into podcasting because I wanted to meet really interesting people. And for me, the guests on my show were my excuse to reach out to and reach out and talk to, you know, some of my heroes and some of the people that I really wanted to learn from. So I got to interview the likes of Seth Godin and I got to interview all sorts of different politicians and strategists and marketers, but also company builders. And I just had so much fun doing it. But, you know, when it came time for me to start thinking about what I could do as my jumping off point, you know, start my entrepreneurial journey, I thought, like, how can I blend my advertising career with podcasting? And at the time, I was doing some radio work with a couple of people. I was sort of a guest on a consistent radio show. These guys and me went out for a drink one night. We started talking, and where we kind of landed was this idea of creating podcasts for businesses. And when I kind of thought about that, I thought, well, if you could build a podcast production agency similar to a creative agency, to me, that feels like a really good model, because you've got your client service, you've got your strategy, you've got your creative, you've got your production, and then you have the, you know, sort of the behind the scenes service side. And, you know, it really, really felt like there might be something there, but there's always a but. I had tried to start businesses in the past, and I was one of those guys that when I started a business, I would agonize over the dumbest things, like the color of our logo, or, you know, what sort of paper should we use with our business card? And let's be honest, that's just resistance, right? That's just being afraid of actually starting the business. So I 100%. Said to my partners, I'll do this, but I'm only going to do this if we can put the minimum viable product out in the world and see if that's of any interest. And literally that night, went home, threw a couple messages together to some friends on LinkedIn. And the first response back was from a buddy of mine. And he said, my wife would like to meet you guys tomorrow. Her company's looking to start a podcast. And literally it started that way. I was in their office the next day. We didn't have a name for the company. We didn't have a website. We had nothing. And all we knew was to talk about podcasting and talk about, you know, a brand's role in podcasting. And out of that meeting, she said, send me an estimate. we went out to the car and looked at each other and said, okay, so what do we charge for this? And, you know, just had no clue. That night she sent us a note saying, what's the name of your company, by the way? And we kind of all text each other saying, we need a name, we need a name, we need a name. So I'm somewhat embarrassed, but also kind of proud to say that Jar Audio is actually an acronym, and it stands for Jen, Aaron, and Roger, which are the original founders of the company. And we are where we are today.
Wow. I absolutely love those origin stories, right? Because, you know, a lot of times people struggle and agonize. I mean, I'm the same way, like, oh, what's the font, the color? And it's, again, it's like, as Seth Godin says, it's just the resistance. It's what Stephen Pressfield says. If you're a writer, like, you're,
and that's
just,
actually the book. That's the book that, you know, changed my mind.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry to cut you off, but it was literally a conversation with Seth Godin. He was interviewing Tim Ferriss at the time. And he talked about Stephen Pressfield.
Yes.
The War of Art. Mm-hmm. And read that and said, I'm never doing this again unless I can just ship and put it out in the world. And that's what I did.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So funny, you know, you talk about you start a podcast so you could interview the people that you respect. I am a certified StoryGrid editor, which it's a long story, but the very first StoryGrid workshop I ever went to was in February of 2017 in New York City, blizzard, almost didn't get there. And thankfully my late wife, Jane, sorted that out, but I'm literally sitting there and in the room is Stephen Pressfield and Seth Godin.
No way.
Because Sean Coyne is Stephen Pressfield's editor, right? And I'm like Stephen Pressfield and Seth Godin are two of the most influential people on my writing career and just generally like creativity. And I'm in the room with them. And I'm literally, Stephen Pressfield's like at the seminar because he's like, I don't know why, but he's there. I'm sitting behind him the whole day. I have a picture of him and me. I have a picture of him, me and Seth Godin, a picture of Sean Coyne and Tim Grohl. Like I use this. I have a slide that I built for this thing I'm working on about the origins of this thing called the Story Funnel. And I remember looking at this going, wow, like that is, isn't it amazing when you get to talk to someone that you look up to? And I mean, that's the reason why I do these podcasts as well. It's so cool to like talk with people that have had a journey, you know? And when you talk about like how you came up with your idea or like your first client meeting and you're like, oh, gee, I don't even know how much to charge for this.
Yeah.
Those, like, that's what this is all about, right? And I absolutely just think it's really cool that one, you could share that with us, and two, that you're, you know, you still kind of keep on doing it. And so how has Jar Audio kind of evolved from that first customer meeting? Has it, what did you guys have to do? Were there any zigs and zags that you had to go figure out?
Yeah, I think, sorry, Jar, can you hear me? I feel like you might've just dropped out.
Oh, no, I can
hear you. Oh, no, there you are. Sorry about that.
Yeah, no problem.
I heard a click and then you stopped. Anyways, so I'll start fresh. Yeah, I mean, from you know, coming out of that meeting, we really just jumped right into the project. And luckily, you know, what we were doing was not anything we hadn't done before, which was, you know, create a podcast. And so, you know, between my partners and me, we got to work on developing the idea with the client, working on the marketing, and then just started recording episodes and you know, editing, and eventually got to the point where they were live. You know, the really cool thing too was, you know, the client we were working with is a company called Sage Natural Wellness, and they were arguably one of the world's biggest wellness brands. They specialize in aromatherapy, and they're located here in Vancouver. And so we got to stay really hands-on and collaborative with them the whole time. And they put a lot of, you know, marketing effort behind it as well. So when we launched, we were number two in the health category on Apple Podcasts. We were even beating Oprah, which I remember joking at the time. She had it coming. Somebody had it eventually, right?
Yes.
And so we kind of had this moment of like, wow, this is amazing, but also kind of, you know, it almost felt, I don't want to say it felt too easy, but it felt very natural and comfortable. And just like anything else, you know, we just kept building and building and going to the gym, you know, the more you work out that muscle. In our case, it was, you know, sort of building the company muscle, which involved thinking about all our systems and our processes and people. Things kind of, you know, kept rolling from there. And our next client after that was Lululemon, which is another global, global heavy hitter when it comes to the wellness world. Our client after that was Expedia, which is the, you know, the top, top brand in the online travel space. And so we, you know, between a blend of luck and just, and skill and reputation and connections, we, you know, we started building there. But I keep going back to the fact that if, you know, none of it would have happened, I still believe that none of that would have happened if we had, you know, beat the thing to death and dissected every little bit, because so much of it is just the magic of starting, and figuring it out as you go, which is not for everybody. You know, not all people are cut out for that. You have to have a certain level of, trust in yourself, but also, you know, there's some, obviously the financial side needs to be taken care of. So we were still working at the time. I was working for an agency. My partner, Jen, was teaching podcasting and creative writing at the University of British Columbia. And my partner, Aaron, does a lot of audio projects on the side. And so we had the comfort of that. But we also felt really confident that what we would do, which is, you know, all we really do is create great podcasts that happen to be, you know, released by a brand. We knew we could do that. And so, our offering has changed very little since day one. It's just, I will say the thing that has changed is, you know, you get to that point in your entrepreneurial journey where you tap out of your immediate connections when it comes to new business. And now we're in the wide open ocean and having to swim amongst people that are meeting us for the first time. So that's where we're at right now.
So how long has the company been around for?
So we were a partnership for 2 years. We've been incorporated for a year.
Okay.
And our partnership, you know, we were very light touch at the time. So I always like to say that we're a year old because it felt like at the time it wasn't really a full on company yet. We were almost just doing projects.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always, it always is interesting how it sort of evolves. And this whole like side hustle, it's almost like it was a side hustle for a little bit.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, totally.
Which I think is an important thing to realize that, and I'm glad you brought up the don't make it perfect, just ship it, you know, like figure out how to go, kind of go, you know, build as you go, because you never know. I mean, you got kind of lucky that you're, what you started off with was what you sort of are ending up doing now. But a lot of companies, they got to zig and zag, right? It's like validating the market may miss, the product may not be what it needs to be. And there's all sorts of just every single thing in between those things.
Yeah. And, you know, it's so funny. I was doing, you know, some cash flow forecasting late into the night last night. And, you know, the company's in a really great shape, but we still have a sense of, you know, uncertainty at all times that, and that's just something that I need to get over, because I think a lot of it comes from my experience in the advertising world. I was in the agency world at the time where the industry shifted from, you know, retainer-based client relationships to project to project. You had to constantly be hunting in order to eat. And I think I have carryover, you know, with the company now, you know, in that mindset. So actually, my biggest fear is, you know, we're going to bring on a bunch of staff and then, you know, the tap's going to run dry and I have to let a bunch of people go. And so what we've done since day one is hired contractors. So we actually don't have any employees. They're all contractors. A lot of them are working practically full time, and we support their health benefits and all that sort of stuff. But because I've never felt comfortable that this is always going to be the way, and everything's always going to be great, I think I've always sort of had my foot sort of halfway on the pedal, then versus all the way down. And it wasn't until kind of last night that I'm like, oh fuck you, pardon my language, but
that's okay.
What are you so worried about? You know, we've been doing this for, this amount of time, and, you got the cash, get going. Like it's just so funny just thinking about being an entrepreneur for the first time. It's stuff like that, you know, feels like 90% of being an entrepreneur is psychological and 10% is skill.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. I would 100% agree. Anyone in the world can do this job. It's not hard. It's a game, and there, you got to be, you know, comfortable being uncomfortable with things, and you got to push past some of these fears, but most of it's fear, because I don't think I've ever made a decision that was irreversible. And that's something that's important to realize, you know,
except for that tattoo you got.
Yeah. Except for the tattoos. Those are, I mean, even then to a certain
even
degree,
then. But technology these days,
still painful, still painful. But yeah, I mean, I'm really glad you brought that up, because there's a fear among new entrepreneurs. And I even have this fear. I mean, I've done 6 startups, right? Like I know kind of the gig, I know what it is. And I still have this real apprehension of exactly what you talked about. What happens if this goes wrong and I've got to let these people down? Because that ultimately for me is what it came down to. It's like, they trusted me to bring them on. They believed in the vision. My job's to go get the business or build a product or go raise money. If I don't do that, we don't eat. Yeah. And then I have to let them go. And that's a hard burden to have.
Mm-hmm.
The beautiful thing that I found is that most people get it. They understand that as long as you're trying as hard as you can, things happen, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't control some things. I think that's the other thing that's powerful about, once you realize, well, powerful about the fact that it's a lot of luck and a lot of hard work, but a lot of combination of luck and hard work and being at the right place. Like you're such a beautiful story about how you have a friend. They're like, yeah, we're interested. You walk, you pitch. They're like, yeah, give me a proposal. And you're like, oh, great. Like, I didn't know this was going to be this real.
Totally. Yeah, that's literally it.
and that's the perfect, but this is the thing. This is why that's such a great story. It's the perfect combination of luck, skill, and being at the right place at the right time. The alchemy of all three of those things coming together. I mean, you got really lucky. And for, you know, just in general, it doesn't happen that way all the time. But the perfect example of, you were ready to do that. Like, even though you didn't think you were ready. And that's the thing I think is really important to realize, is that having a side hustle, working on being an entrepreneur within reason, you're ready. If you're like, you know, I think I could do this entrepreneur stuff, you're ready to do it. Just go
totally.
Do it. Yeah. And I love the fact that you continue to grow, and on now you're at the point where it's like, oh, now people got to get to know us. And I mean, you know, I'm on the, this podcast is on the Blue Wire Network, because I'm an advisor to Blue Wire, and they are growing like a weed. Like I always say, they're the fastest growing sports podcast network on the planet, because you know, because they're great. I love what they do, but going through some of the same challenges that you guys are going through. It's a little bit bigger. I mean, I think they just closed a round of funding. I don't remember what it was, but you know, Kevin, the CEO, he's building a scalable venture-backed company. Mm-hmm. So it's all about growth for him. But when you talk about branded content, podcasts from companies, they figured that out like a year ago that, oh, we got to do this. We have, you know, brands want good content. Content's king. If we produce great content, they're going to pay us for this. They're going to get what they want out of it. And that model works. And so it's interesting that you bring that up, because do you see more and more companies kind of wanting to get in the podcast space as another content marketing play, or do certain brands do better with it than others? I mean, I'm actually fascinated on how you evaluate that.
Yeah, that's a great question. So to answer your first question, yeah, we are seeing companies, more and more companies wanting to get into the space. You know, there's some that just jump headfirst and get right into it. Some dabble first by purchasing some ads on other podcasts, which is another way of getting into the space. A lot of them are seeing that, there's an audience out there that is of interest to the brand. Cause it is quite a unique, the podcast audience is quite unique. To answer your other question, the ones that are looking to get in, some are more successful than others. And I think it comes down to a couple things. One is the successful ones understand that this can't be an advertisement. Nobody's going to listen to a 20 or 30 minute, ad where you're spewing all sorts of product benefits and whatnot about the company. Cause who wants to listen to that? That's just not good audio.
No.
they might listen once, but they sure as hell aren't going to subscribe and come back, which is sort of the whole point of podcasting. And so we find the ones that are more successful take what we would call a story first approach. A quick way of saying that is they produce a great podcast that just happens to be brought to you by their brand. It's tied into the brand values, but we very rarely mention the brand on the podcast. If we do, it's maybe off the top, maybe, through a midpoint rebrand and then on the outro. And then the ones that are really successful also take, what we would call an audience first approach. They think like true broadcasters. So they understand who their audience is. What do they need? What value can we deliver to them? What do we know about them? What are some of their struggles right now? How can we deliver something that is of value that is going to keep them coming back for more? What other podcasts are they listening to? What is their, what are their behaviors like, demographics, geography, all that information. And then you craft the podcast to serve them. So if you're, if you're somebody like Expedia, who's a client of ours, they know that people are looking to get trusted information about how to travel safely, in this pandemic, during COVID. And so we actually had to pivot the podcast to be, all about sort of how to safely either travel or book your travel, because a lot of it comes down to booking and then having to cancel and all that sort of stuff. But none of it actually, very little of it has anything to do with Expedia. It's actually just about the online or just the travel world in general. Our client at RBC, they've got a great podcast called Disruptors, which is all about a conversation around how the economy is going to recover coming out of COVID. And so it's, excuse me, it's featuring a lot of really fascinating business leaders, science leaders, social scientists talking about, some innovative ways that certain industries are need to be disrupted or currently being disrupted. And so from the bank standpoint, their audience is looking for relevant information on the economy and how to get through the next handful of years. And coming from the bank, they get this really great brand halo effect, because they're not talking about the bank at all on the podcast, but people know it's coming from RBC. And so, taking that audience first approach is absolutely key for success with a branded podcast. And then I'd say the final piece that we notice is you have to have a certain level of, what we would call creative courage. And what I mean by that is you have to constantly be pushing the limits of what, you know, what is comfortable from the brand from a creative standpoint, because then you get stale and then you push back to talking about yourself and talking about products, you know, product benefits and all the, you know, all the things that as marketers, we sometimes struggle to, you know, to leave as a second point of the conversation. Because, you know, because if you're not doing that, you're not going to connect with that audience and you're not going to keep their attention. And one of the cool, like, I get so excited about talking about this, but one of the, you know, the cool thing about podcasting is, you know, brands constantly struggle to keep customers in their sales, you know, in the sales funnel or prospects in the sales funnel, you know, cause they lose them for a number of different reasons. Either they're attracted by a competitor or you've turned them off in some way, or there's just a lot of noise out there and they just get distracted. So you lose them. And so you're, as a brand, you're constantly having to fill that funnel. And so from a content marketing standpoint, we think podcasts are the absolute best at retaining that audience's attention, because the very nature of a podcast involves subscribing. You know, they're opting into receiving more content from you. Like, there's very few mediums that are like that. I mean, newsletters being one of them, you know, some of the video stuff these days, but there's very few that's doing a really good job of that. But if you do a podcast well, and it's something that, you know, that audience is asking for more of, you're then engaging with them. And so from an engagement standpoint, we see listen lengths of, our average is about 95%, which, you know, when you think about a marketing medium's role, which is to, you know, capture someone's attention and keep it there for as long as possible. I mean, 95% coming from a brand is pretty killer, and we're really proud of that. So, that's where we really get excited about the opportunities for brands.
Wow. Well, thanks for that. So, story driven, audience first, creative courage. That's a nice trifecta, I think, of how that all works. I'd say it's funny because have you heard of Gen Z Media?
No, I don't think so.
So Chris Terry, I think he's a fellow Canadian that now lives in New Jersey. So don't bash him too much. He's one of the founders of Gen Z Media. Gen Z Media does podcast, story focused podcast. They do like the old kind of radio, you know, series where it's like they did one called Treasure Island 2020. I think it was Treasure Island 2020, cool. Where they literally redid
narrative style.
Yeah. Redid Treasure Island in 2020. And they did it with BYU. I think it was with BYU.
Nice.
Chris will kill me for messing it up, but, I interviewed him. He was the only other kind of media podcast type folk that I interviewed.
Cool.
Reason why I interviewed him is because my fiance's daughter loves Gen Z Media. We listen to it as like a family. You know, it's great stuff, like 6 minutes, and like all their stuff is all story driven. And he's a jazz musician by former trade. So all the music's great, and it's just, you just get so enthralled with it. And so, it's really cool to hear that he also agrees. That means that their whole, the way they do it is they, if they're going to have like a series, like a new show, they write it like they're writing a episodic TV series. And so they sort of know the entire through line of the whole thing within reason.
It's like the Netflix of audio.
Exactly. They would love that, but it's totally focused on Gen Z. So a lot of the content, it's funny because he says, well, look, we want to make content that anyone can enjoy, including the parents. So we don't like target our demographic. If it's Gen Z, if it's tweens or whatever, we shoot a little higher. So that now, kind of like what Disney does, right? Disney's got all these little things where like it's enjoyable for the parents too. But boy, he was like, it's all about the story. It's all about like, what does the audience want? Exactly the things that you talk about. And I think they even do collaborations as well, like the one with BYU. They did that in collaboration. They actually.
Well, I was going to ask, do they find a client first and then develop the idea around the client, or do they develop the idea and then find a client?
I think it goes both ways. We talked a little bit about that, not a ton, because the other thing they do is, okay, now they're a quote unquote media company, right? So they do the podcasts, and now they're like, yeah, we're publishing these middle grade, you know, young YA books, like the. The Mars Patel series, there's now a book series about it. You know, so it's interesting because, like, when they want to create great content for their audience, right? So they focus on the audience. It's really story driven, and what's interesting, these collaborations with other things, as you mentioned, if it's like a really good brand that's got the right intent, and it's just hard to do. So I really applaud you for making this like. It's so hard for brands to realize this because they're all about what's our ROI, what's this, what's that. And you're kind of like, man, that's not the way you should be gauging this. You should be in it for the right reasons. And yeah, you're going to need to do your ad spend and all your budgeting. And I get this thing with the PR firm all the time. Like, what's the return on investment on PR? I'm like, I don't know. I can't tell you that. I can tell you if you don't do it, you know, you're going to be at a disadvantage, but it's really hard to quantify.
Jerry, I'm going to take this clip from the podcast and include it in all of my conversations.
Feel free because.
Yeah, because I mean, that's literally, you know, that is where we're at right now. You know, with a lot of these conversations is sort of what's the ROI and you're right. It is difficult. I'll tell you as well that part of the reason why it's also difficult is that the industry is still young. I mean, the podcast world is, you know, podcasting itself has only been around for 15 years, but, you know, sort of like commercialized podcasting, it's really only like, let's say it's really only taken off within the last 5 years or so. Now when you have a conversation with a client, the question is always, how many downloads are we going to get?
Right.
You know, cause they're looking for that. Like how big is the audience? It's going to be and all that sort of stuff. And I totally get it. I mean, I would ask the same questions. The challenge is that the industry is not at a point yet where everybody's sharing their information. And there also isn't like a clearinghouse where all that information comes out of. And you know, the perfect example I like to give is that it's not like the movie industry where there's box office numbers that get released every week. You know, yes, we have access to, you know, the Apple charts and we have access to, you know, services like Chartable and, you know, Podchaser and all that sort of stuff, but nobody's actually revealing how many downloads they're getting, unless you're in that like top, I'd say 1%, you know, sort of the Joe Rogans and the Dailies and the, you know, the This American Lives and they're using it as part of their, you know, their sort of business success story, which is great. It's amazing. And so the ROI conversation is difficult for that reason, but you're absolutely right. Like it's so much more than just the size of the audience. It's the level of engagement. It's the brand halo effect, which also has its, you know, sometimes challenges to measure. It's everything that comes with it. So it's interesting. I've had this conversation many times with, you know, either agency owners or people in the PR world or even some of the advertising world. And I think also it doesn't help that everybody has gravitated to the programmatic, you know, advertising side of things, which can, you know, tell you exactly how many impressions you're going to get and tell you exactly how. So I think the market has become sort of, programmed to, you know exactly what they're paying for.
Yeah. And, you know, fair enough. Like I'm with you.
Absolutely.
You know, at all the startups I've been at, we've always got to make this call. What am I going to spend money on?
Right? Because totally.
Don't have any money. Like that's the whole point. But when it comes to like product market fit, launch strategy, go to market strategy, and you want to use content marketing or organic SEO or ads or whatever it is that you're kind of like trying to get your brand quote unquote out there. Fundamentally, And I actually talked with James over at matchmaker.fm about this. I actually have an interview with him I'm working on. I'm going to publish soon, I hope. Nice. It'll probably be before I publish this one. But, you know, he gets the same kind of questions because he runs not only matchmaker.fm, he runs podcast.co or Inc. or IO or whatever.
Which is fantastic. That's one of my favorite sites.
Yeah, it's super, super cool, right? So, but he said, this was really interesting because we were talking about being a guest on a podcast. And people always ask me, how many downloads do you get? What's the reach? All this sort of thing. And that doesn't happen very often, but generally, okay, yeah, I just started out for a year. It's not going to be Rogan style numbers, right? But, you know, the thing I always tell people is like, look, he brought this up, which I like completely latched onto. He said, well, think about it this way. If you could talk to 30, 20, 10 of your customers directly in their ear, like you could, if you were like in business, if you're a business person, you could go to the public square and you could talk to 30 people, would you do it? And there's not a business owner in the world that wouldn't be like, of course, why wouldn't I do that? Right. That's clearly 30 people that are interested in what I'm talking about. This is nuts. Of course. And he's like, that's why it really doesn't matter, like how many quote unquote downloads are listed, because you're having a direct conversation with someone. That's the power of podcasting.
Totally. And to add to that, it's also, you know, what we would call a pull medium where, you know, you're not barfing this in their face like radio, where you're, you know, sitting in the waiting room at your doctor's office being forced to listen to this radio station and then being forced to listen to this ad and being forced to, you know, like, you know, absorb it. They're saying, I choose to listen to this right now, and I choose to listen to it again.
Yeah. Yeah. So although, and I agree, like metrics matter, of course I want more downloads. Of course I want everyone to listen to the show because it's awesome, right? We're awesome people. Listen to what we have to say.
Totally.
But the thing that he talked about, even the thing that Kevin talks about at Blue Wire, it's the quality of the content will stand forever. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing with the old blogging model, right? How many downloads, I mean, how many views, how many organic? I got to, you know, game the organic stuff. If you just write good stuff, it will get read. And eventually, over time, this is like legacy kind of, you know, cornerstone content. Like this interview will be permanently and forever on my website because, you know, I've got show notes. We're going to, you know, we'll summarize what we talked about. There will be, this stands forever, and it may take a long tail like SEO does. It, you know, you may stumble. It may not be the thing that you want, you know, 100%. But the thing to realize about the medium is exactly what you said. People opt in. They choose to listen, and then they choose to make a determination. So if you're having a conversation with the audience, you're adding value, you're story-driven, right? Exactly the three things: story-driven, audience first, and creative in your approach. As a brand, this is literally like going to a conference and giving a speech. Like if someone says, hey, I want you to give the keynote, are you going to say no to a keynote? I mean, maybe if you're Bill Gates, or maybe if you're Steve Jobs, but if you're any one of us, if someone said, hey, we want you to give a keynote in front of 1,000 people, or even 30 people, or even 100 people, I'd be like, yeah, I'm in. Oh yeah. You want me to talk about what I do? Oh, sure.
Totally.
I think that's the same thing about podcasting, that eventually the metrics will come eventually, you know, because PR is the same way. Everyone asks about, you know, reach and, you know, earned media and, oh, we're paying you all this money to get us publicity. What's it really worth? And it's not like it can be quantifiable, but I think you got to take a step back and actually a step up. You got to realize that when you're telling your story for your company and your brand, like you generally have to have this sort of signs of life in the world, and people just, they got to know who you are. And honestly, podcasting is the best way for someone to actually know who you are, because I get this all the time. Like someone will meet me for the first time and they've listened to the podcast. They're like, yeah, wow. You know, I've listened to your podcast and you just sound so cool and nice. And yeah, you really are not a dick. Right. And I say, thanks. Cause I'm not like, I try really hard not to be, but you know what I mean? It's like there's something about voice.
Well, it's intimate.
And I was on this podcast.
And we're literally in your ear right now.
We're literally in your ear right now. Right. And I was on this podcast called the StoryGrid Editor Roundtable Podcast. This was the first podcast I've ever did, part of StoryGrid. You know, Sean and Tim.
They need to shorten the name.
Yeah. Right.
I can't help but critique.
Yeah, I know. But like Sean and Tim were gracious enough to let there was five of us that we were all studying StoryGrid together, and we got to go and do a podcast to talk about StoryGrid, and we're story nerds and this whole thing, right? And the other four of my fellow colleagues were all editors. They're like, that's their business, right? I was the only one that I'm like, I don't really edit books for a business. I just love this stuff. This is the coolest thing, right? But what was interesting is that we're doing this podcast because we purely just love story, helping people, educate, this whole thing, right? It was like, I mean, and it was a lot of work, but it was so rewarding. We got to talk with each other. You know, we got to interact, we got to watch movies and just like nerd out beyond nerd out, right? For all four of them, I'm pretty sure to a person, got way more business because people got to know them through how they talked and how they worked and what we did. And there is no other way other than getting on a phone call, right? And imagine the reach you can have. Like, this is who I am. Now people get to know you. As a brand, I can't think of a more valuable thing. So
it interestingly also, you know, you would use the example of, you know, if you're given the opportunity to get the keynote speech in front of 1,000 people, you know, of course you'd take up that opportunity. And this is similar. I would argue it's even better because, and also sort of, you know, similar to what you had just said, that this conversation is going to live on your website for the rest of time. But with the technology these days as well, what we're starting to do is, you know, I'm sure everyone's listening is familiar with dynamic ad insertion, you know, where you're inserting ads into the podcast, based on demographics of the listener, and you can switch up the messaging and all that sort of stuff. What we're starting to do as well is dynamic content insertion, where yes, this conversation can be, you know, can be listened to, you know, 10 years down the road, but let's say, you know, a key part of the information changes, you can dynamically insert that content into the episode. So it can actually be updated.
Wow.
So it's not as, you know, sort of, it's not as, you know, it doesn't have that, yes, it's evergreen, but with a twist,
right?
In a
right.
lot of ways, which I think is a game changer for content in a lot of, you know, in the audio space, and something that is like I think 2021 is going to be the year of the dynamic content insertion. Let's put it that way.
Wow, heard it here first, folks. Dynamic content insertion. I'm gonna.
Exactly.
We'll look back at this in another year or so and be like, "Yo, you were right," or "you were horribly right. wrong."
You're horribly wrong. Yeah, that dynamic content insertion never worked out.
Yeah, who's the silly guy that said that? Right.
Yeah, that is the segue of podcasts is dynamic audio or dynamic content insertion.
Exactly.
Never took off. Never Although I feel like off. Segways did take off in the end. They just took off for different reasons.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Like, we're not riding around with them, but the whole, like, go to Washington, D.C., and that's a booming industry.
Yeah. No, I mean, he was pretty, you know, a little arrogant that it's going to change the world, right? But
yeah.
It did in a way. It did. I mean, you see the evolution of all of them coming out now. You've got electric scooters. You got that little disc thing. I mean,
that's true.
You know, Segway was what, over 20 years ago?
Yeah.
So, I mean, he was right. He just was a couple of decades off.
That was Dean Kamen, wasn't it?
I think it was. Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah, he was fantastic. Yeah. I remember I remember at the time, everyone thought he was crazy, and then it happened and they all laughed at him. But you're right. It has changed things so much.
It's changed a huge amount. I mean, just look at what that propelled when it came to electric vehicles. I mean, I honestly think that was the start of, oh, electric vehicles. Huh?
Like totally.
These are actually viable. I mean, look at the electric vehicle. I mean, now, I mean, I think here in California by like 2030 or 2040, we can't sell gas cars anymore. They all got to be EV. I mean, and a lot of people are going like, oh, blah, blah, can't really do that, whatever. But I mean, same thing with happened to gasoline. It's like used to be steam and now it's was then it's gas and now it's going to be electric and hydrogen. I mean, you know,
totally.
It's like stuff evolves. It's not.
I read somewhere the other day that economists consider 2021 to be peak auto.
Yeah.
And from now on, there will be less and less cars in the road. Whereas before it was just obviously constantly growing. And, this new concept of, you know, we're all familiar with SaaS, but this new concept of it's, you know, TaaS, mm-hmm. transportation as a service is unbelievable when you dig into it. You know, there's going to come a time where you could own a Tesla and your Tesla can be in your garage. And while you're having dinner with your kids, somebody can rent your Tesla out.
Yeah.
And your garage door will open and your car will be gone, but somebody will be using it and it'll come back later that, and then you'll get paid for that. Mm-hmm. I've always wondered, I don't know who's going to clean up the vomit or whatever when something bad happens.
That's an extra charge, just like in an Airbnb, right?
Yeah.
No,
I could see there's a whole like service station aspect to it too, where the car goes through a bit of a cleaning cycle and
100%.
And then returns to you. So, you know, you're making money off your car.
100%. I mean,
that's super cool.
The utilization of a car, just so everyone knows, you know, it's literally like 5%. Like most of the time it's parked in your driveway. Well, like just imagine you go to work. If you don't obviously drive for a living, it sits in a parking lot. Like it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Who would ever have thought? And I think COVID is what accelerates that. Just like I think all these things get accelerated by these changes. I mean, even getting back to your thing about dynamic content and dynamic ad insertion and how podcasts, I mean, in the next 3 to 5 years, I think podcasting will take on a different role. I mean, you've got places like Clubhouse that are, you know, basically like personalized talk radio. Like you get your buddies together and you can talk about stuff, or you can listen in on cool people. Never could do that. You could do that with podcasts, but you can't do that in real time with podcasts, right? So yeah, the times they are changing. And I agree. I think you're going to see a lot of cool stuff happening in podcasting and audio. And I think it's akin to like every industry, but like the transportation stuff is a great example of the sort of entrenched thing that's rapidly changing. And I think audio and radio and all that sort of stuff was sort of entrenched and now it's completely changed and it's going to happen pretty rapidly. So
totally.
My guess is that your Jar Media is going to have a lot of clients.
Yeah, we hope so. Yeah, I mean, we feel confident that the space is still ripe for opportunity. And I think, you know, our sort of, at least, or, you know, one of my biggest roles these days is to keep us focused on what we, you know, what we're good at and try not to get too distracted by all the, you know, the shiny new things. And, you know, like Clubhouse is one example, which we definitely think is fantastic and really exciting, but we're also taking a bit of a, you know, sort of step back to see sort of how things shake out a little bit, as there's this huge push for everyone to get into it. We also know that things are going to kind of, you know, things are going to kind of, flex over the next, you know, I was going to say next few years, but I feel it would be more for the next few months.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, just within the last month, there's been a, you know, it's like sucking a bowling ball through a garden hose of people that have gotten into this, you know, gotten into the service. And just like any other thing that has lasting legs, it will evolve. And we're trying to find our space in it for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Roger, I really appreciate your time and coming on. And just like, again, I love talking to people in media and especially, you know, this, what I do with the podcast and stuff. So thanks again. Good luck and stay safe.
Thanks so much, Jerry.
Thanks for listening to the Entrepreneur Ethos podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did creating it. My hope is that you learned something that can make you a little bit better. If you enjoyed the podcast, please do share it with friends and review it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also join my email list by visiting theentrepreneurethos.com to get my thoughts on what I'm doing to get better, as well as what I'm working on. You can also pick up my book, The Entrepreneur Ethos, if you want to learn the traits, values, and beliefs that I think we need to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient entrepreneur, and frankly, world community. Feel free to follow me on Twitter @TheDailyMBA and let me know if you have any questions or recommendations for a guest you'd like me to talk to. Also, drop me a note if you try anything we talked about on this or any other episode. I'd love to hear what's working for you. Until next time, keep getting better.
Mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.